Our guest today is the one and only Matt Willis. From playing bass in Busted and being crowned King of the Jungle to starring on the West End stage and the big screen, Matt is one of Britain's best-loved musicians, presenters, and actors. He's here to share his incredible journey from addiction to recovery and beyond, including the power of positive rebellion and human connection, his strategies for overcoming imposter syndrome, and why we should all be stepping out of our comfort zone. So Matt, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited. It's nice in here.
Yeah, it is nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
Nice and cozy.
Yeah, it's a good vibe. I like it. Yeah.
So it's rather strange times that we're living in, but even amongst that or against that backdrop, what one thing are you grateful for in your life right now?
One thing am I grateful for? I mean, overall, my family, you know, I mean, to be quite serious, like they fill me with so much joy every day. Yeah. Like I'm working away at the moment, so I'm touring and I'm kind of coming back, and I normally I get home on like a Sunday afternoon, I have the rest of the day Sunday, then I drop in school Monday, then I go off again. So that little brief period of time I have with them is just brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, I really cherish it. So they keep me very grateful.
Amazing. Mm. So how long have you been a father for now? Is it 12 years?
12 years. Yeah. My eldest is 13 in June.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is mad. Yeah. I can't quite believe that she's going to be 13 in June.
Wow.
Yeah.
And would you say that you know, since you were young, knew you were going to be a father, always wanted to be a father? Or was it a different kind of journey towards that?
It's the only thing I ever wanted to be.
Really? Brilliant.
Like when I think about when I was a kid, the only thing I knew I wanted to be was a dad.
Okay.
You know, I kind of I always pictured myself being a father. You know, I had a bit of a strange kind of family upbringing. I kind of and that's just the way it was, and that's that. And but I always kind of went, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna be, you know. And I kind of I always really really wanted it. You know, I didn't necessarily think it was going to happen for me for many years. Like when it happened, I was really surprised. I was kind of quite shocked. I was 26, and I kind of found out that Emma was pregnant, and I was a bit like, oh, I wasn't this, I'm not ready, this is not why this is in 10 years time, you know. That kind of thing happens, but I'm super glad it did, and it's been the most incredible thing for me.
That's amazing. Maybe pick up on the transformative nature of becoming a father and a husband a bit later on, but what else is going well in your life right now? What else is good for you?
I feel like lots of things are going well. I can very quickly turn on that. You know, I can catastrophize things quite quickly, and I have to really kind of focus on not doing that. You know, and for me, that's keeping everything very much in the day. You know, which is something I learned through recovery, and it's kind of like a day at a time. And when I focus on today, everything's great.
Yeah.
You know, when I start to think about 5 years or so, things go a bit squiffy for me. So I kind of I try not to do that. I kind of but then even when I think of the next year, like I've got a good year ahead of me. Like I'm kind of quite, I'm happy and content. Like things are going well. Things are exactly where I want them to be. You know, I mean, of course things could be better and you can always think like that. But actually when I think about it, things are pretty good. I'm okay.
What role does like challenging yourself to do new things play in that for you?
I'm always trying something new.
Yeah.
I'm kind of one of those guys that my wife literally rolls her eyes now at the things that I become a little bit obsessed with quite quickly. Mm-hmm. And but I love that. I love finding out everything about something. You know, or as much I'm into everything but a master of none of them. You know, it's kind of like I just kind of like to learn and kind of like to find out what's this about.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm constantly kind of trying to challenge myself with something that seems brand new and different, you know, and I really enjoy that.
Yeah.
You know, and some things stick, some things don't, you know, but that's okay. I'm kind of cool with that, you know, and I find out, well, that's actually not for me, or that's becoming really obsessive, or maybe need to calm down with that a little bit, you know, like all these kind of things. But I love finding out new stuff. I recently bought some recording equipment. So I've never been into tech.
Yeah.
Like I play bass to my level and I stick at that, and it's kind of like that's always what I've done musically, and I write songs on acoustic guitar and I take them to the band and we build them into a track, you know, and then a producer does everything. But recently I've been meeting lots of songwriters and different people and kind of things, and their ability to make something sound like a record yeah. almost instantly mesmerizes me. I'm like, I need to know that, you know. So and I've never been very musical, so I'm kind of trying to learn music theory as well at the same time, which is a whole different ball game, you know, kind of. And it doesn't really interest me, which I find quite challenging, because I don't really want to know this, but I feel like I need to, you know, like it kind of feeds into that, which I'm sure we're going to talk about, imposter syndrome, that kind of like being a musician who doesn't really know music. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, oh, I should really probably know something about this, what notes are in a chord and what chord tones are, and all that kind of things, you know. So I feel like I'm kind of getting into that at the moment, which is a brand new challenge and causing me lots of mind melting anxiety at times, but I'm dealing with it slowly.
No. I can relate to a lot of what you share there. I mean, I think curiosity is a great trait to have, and explore new things and try new things. There's another side to that, which to me feels important, around, like, I think we're born with innate gifts and capacities and qualities, etc., that are almost clues to like our path in life.
Yeah.
And then we sometimes feel, oh, but I need to get good at this as well, and that as well, and that as well. But they might, I mean, this is just something I'm posing to you. They might just be, it's like the flip side of the coin. By having that one strength, the flip side is that, fine, you don't have the capacity there, but that's not what your true calling is. And I just wonder how that lands with you.
Yeah, I think you're so right. You know, I think like for such a long time, I really struggled with music. Like I was really good at coming up with concepts and song ideas and kind of bits and especially with lyrical ideas, like that was kind of my strength. And I was like, well, that's what I do.
Yeah.
You know, but when it came to kind of the musicality of things, I struggled. So I kind of just didn't really push myself in that area. And I kind of felt like, oh, well, I do my thing, you know. And slowly but surely, I've been going, well, I think I've got something there, but I feel maybe too scared to bring that up, because that's not my area of expertise. When actually, I'm a songwriter, so it is my area of expertise. I'm just a bit shy about it, you know. And I'm like, so I'm trying to kind of push myself into being a bit more, upfront with my ideas, and kind of like, and just, you know, there is no such thing as a bad idea. You know, sometimes they don't work, you know, but they're still worth pursuing and still worth saying and still worth kind of going for it. And sometimes the ones that you think aren't very good end up being great. You know, also, you know, I just tend to kind of come out with them now and kind of go for it and stop being so fearful about things, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned imposter syndrome earlier, and I think when you're in that state of mind, you often censor yourself, don't you?
Yeah, very much so, very much so. Don't get, you know, I think, and it's for me, it's quite a British thing. It's like, don't have ideas above your station, you know, you're this. You know, don't get outside your box, you know, that kind of thing. You know, like, don't get too ahead of yourself, you know, when really everything that's happened in my life has been outside of my comfort zone and ideas way above my station, you know. So like it's and it seems to have gone well, you know. So it's kind of but I struggle with that so much on a daily basis, that kind of imposter syndrome. I kind of and I still battle that, you know. I kind of still feel like, you know, someone's going to knock on the door and go, all right, mate, your time's up. You know, you've had your luck, you know, you found out, you know, and I've really kind of, and I felt that for such a long time. But, and the interesting thing was, is working in acting now and kind of working with different actors, I always felt that because I was from a pop group and I wasn't going to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
And no one, and you know, and I kind of always had that. So I had to work really hard. So when I walked in the room, I knew everything, even though other people didn't. You know, I was like, I'm going to know everything, and because I can't bear the thought of them not thinking I'm very good.
Yeah.
When and then the more I talk to other actors, they all feel like that. All of us, you know, we all feel like we're out of our depth, that like we don't know what we're doing, and we're kind of like just winging it, you know. And then I talk to other people from different industries, and everyone feels the same. So it's a kind of a, well, not everyone, but like some people I speak to, it kind of seems like a much bigger thing than just me. Definitely. Which was so nice to feel. You know, I was like, oh, other people go through this. And I still feel like it. You know, I still come up against this, sometimes daily, you know. But sometimes it could be in the middle of a scene. Like, we'll be in the show I'm in at the moment, and we'll be in the middle of a scene, and I'll hear someone in the audience cough or something, and I'll think, oh no, they think I'm terrible. Like, I'm instantly, you know, in this, and it stops me from being free. It stops everything from happening. It's kind of like this constant little monkey on my shoulder who whispers in my ear, you know. And I've found ways to kind of deal with that a little bit better. You know, I've kind of ways to kind of shut him up in a way, or kind of acknowledge that it's there and kind of go, it's okay, you know, I've got this thing where I've got these, when that's happening, the headlights are on me, you know, the lights are on me. And it's all me. When in fact, I'm on stage with a partner and with other people. And if I turn those headlights onto them and I focus on them, one, it makes me a better actor and it makes the scene go better. And two, it takes that away from me and makes it about the process rather than me being good.
Exactly.
You know,
I think that is almost the secret to overcoming some of that kind of anxiety around one's performance. How am I being perceived? How am I going to do? Is just to shift the focus of attention from on oneself to outwards, and it just changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, completely. Like I did 2 years at drama school, and it was a Meisner course. Like Meisner's a technique of acting, and it's all about your partner. It's all about putting all your emphasis and all your focus on your partner and feeding off there and reacting off them. And it was the most transformative thing for me, because now I've got that. And and before then, I was always thinking about when the line was coming out. I was thinking about how it was coming out, how I'm going to say the next thing, what's coming up, you know, whereas now I'm just reacting solely off what they're doing. And it's so much more comfortable for me. And it kind of makes me feel like I'm in the process. And I don't judge myself too much now when I walk off stage. Like there was times I'd walk off stage and be like, you know, like this. I don't feel that anymore. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And I've always got tomorrow.
What's great about someone like you talking about this is that I think it's probably comforting for people. It normalizes what you've already suggested is such a common human experience. And especially if people hear people they perceive have got it all, you know, got it all made, et cetera, succeeding in life, but they're still experiencing these kinds of thoughts about themselves. I think it is encouraging. It's comforting to know that you're not alone. However, you've shared some, I guess, strategies or techniques that you've used, and one sounds like, you know, your spotlight moving from there to there.
Yeah.
You mentioned potentially silencing the thoughts, but I know that can sometimes be impossible.
Yeah.
So would you say your relationship with the thoughts has changed?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the thing. I can't silence them. I can't shut them up. And when I try, they become overbearing.
Yeah.
So actually, that never worked. Like me trying to shut them up or silence them or say, no, it's fine. You're great. You're amazing. You know, all that kind of inner talk thing didn't really work for me.
Sure.
Like I found that it just, I was just pretending that. And really, it was kind of like, you're not really.
Yeah,
you know, that little thing was just whispering. You can stand in the Superman pose however long you want, but you're not really. You know, so it was it didn't really work for me. You know, whereas I found that, you know, acknowledging that and going, I know what that is, and I've done this before, and I've got through it, and I know what's happening right now, and it's okay, and I know you're there, and I acknowledge that, but I try not to let it lead. You know, I try to kind of take control of the steering wheel a little bit, you know, and kind of go, okay, you're there. I understand you're there. You won't be there forever. You know, I'm going to carry on with what I'm doing, and I'm going to just kind of like make the most of what I can do, you know. And that seems to work for me, you know, and it seems to kind of be what seems to be working right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that sounds like mindfulness in action. Is that something that you practice?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Like daily, I have different types of mindfulness which I practice. Like I meditate regularly.
Yeah.
I kind of I go in and out of kind of routines with that, and I've tried different kind of ways of kind of making that a definite part of my life. Like in it kind of and when things like that are involved in my day, they seem to go better.
Yeah.
You know, I've recently started working with, I've got no affiliation with this, but it's called a sensei. It's like a little buzzer.
I've got that one. Says,
oh, have you really?
Yeah.
Oh, right, great, amazing. It's incredible.
It's amazing.
And like, and it kind of feels like, in some ways with meditation, I can sit down and I can do it and I'm going through the motions and it's like I haven't done anything. You know, whereas with the sensei, which is a buzzer that sits on your chest and it resonates on your chest bone, and this music plays and I control my breathing, whatever happens, even if my thoughts are racing, it's done something.
Mm.
You know, like I've achieved something in those 10 minutes, like, and I turn it off and there's no kind of like, oh, you didn't do that properly. There's just like, it happened and I did that and it seemed to work. So that is something which I think is really working for me at the moment. And I do that before every performance at the moment.
Amazing.
You know, after I finish a vocal warm up, I sit there for 10 minutes with that thing on my chest and it really seems to kind of control my nerves a little bit and kind of control my mind from racing.
Definitely. Mm. It's like just helping to activate your parasympathetic nervous system, which is that like rest and digest, the calm, the grounded, which is perfect for being able to then go on stage and come from that place of presence.
Yeah.
Whereas when we in the like sort of hyper aroused sympathetic nervous system thing, which is, you know, stress.
Yeah.
It's just so difficult. Then that's when the thoughts are racing and it's just far more difficult to be in control of how one is showing up and engaging and responding.
Exactly. And the character I'm playing right now is a nervous man.
Okay.
Like he's a nervous, erratic, kind of like scatty kind of like guy, you know. So if I come on with all that,
for sure,
it can really be too much and I can go too far with it. But if I come on with a place of calm, I know who the character is, I know who this guy is, I've worked on him, I know who he is. But if I go into that with calm, I can add all these elements on top and it becomes much more
like intentional scattiness.
Yeah, completely.
So I mean, it's wonderful to hear that things are going so well. You know, you mentioned earlier having gone through recovery. So obviously there have been times in your life where there was struggle. Mm. Would you just tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. I think I've been in recovery on and off since I was about 21. Mm. I always felt uncomfortable in my own skin. I always felt less than. You know, I always felt like, you know, this kind of imposter syndrome thing feeds into it a little bit. I always felt like I was kind of, I was just blagging it and I wasn't worth anything. And that's kind of, you know, all these kind of things kind of were a day-to-day battle with me. And I especially found it tough in any kind of social situation. I felt really uncomfortable when there was people around on just like chatting like this would never have happened.
Yeah.
Like I could never be in any kind of situation like this. And I found that when I had a drink or a smoke or a drug, that went away and I became this different guy. And I loved that, you know, and it worked really well. And through my kind of like late teens and early 20s, that was very much the way I dealt with life, you know, on a day-to-day basis. It was kind of like, it was my cure for my kind of torment and my trauma in a way, you know, and for many years it worked, you know. Well, I thought it was working, you know, and then after a while it became apparent that it was no longer working and it was actually causing me many more problems than I could ever have possibly imagined. And I tried many different ways to stop. I went to different rehab centers. I went to different therapists. I went to different places. I kind of took different drugs to get off certain drugs and all these kind of things I tried and nothing seemed to work, you know, and it took me years and years and years to kind of break that cycle. And at points it got really, really bad. And I kind of, and I think the last drink I had was about 4 weeks before my wedding day. And I knew I wasn't going to turn up to the wedding. I knew I'd be too wrecked. I knew I wouldn't be able to see a walk down the aisle. I knew I wouldn't be that guy. And if I was there, I'd let everyone down by the ceremony being over. You know, after that, it would just be a mess. And I knew that was going to happen. And I knew I had to do something. So I finally gave in, you know, and I kind of asked for help. It was the best thing I ever did, you know, kind of asking someone and actually being brutally honest about where I was, because I always hid things. I always didn't tell anyone how bad it was. Many people knew, you know, my wife now, she knew exactly what was going on. Well, she used to keep a diary of stuff that I was doing. You know, I didn't know that at the time, but like, and she showed me that at times, and that's only half of what I was actually doing, you know? So it was, you know, I mean, a lot of people knew, but until I'd actually asked for help, the help that I was offered wasn't helping, you know. And when I actually asked and I actually surrendered and I was like, this is uncontrollable. I cannot control this by myself. I cannot deal with this by myself. I need help. And I was given it, you know, and freely, you know, a lot of the time. You know, I went to a treatment center and in Bournemouth, and I was sat in a room with people that if they weren't there, they were going to jail or they were coming straight from jail there. And there was a lot of people in there from many different backgrounds. And I was suddenly like, oh, this is where I am. This is me. This is, and I'm not going, I'm not as bad as you. I've done exactly the same as you, you know, and I relate to everything you're saying. You know, I haven't been put to jail, you know, but I probably will, you know, if I carry on the way I'm going. And it was an amazing experience. I took advice. I did everything they said. And I wanted it, you know, and I came out of there, I got married, I was sober on my wedding day. I had the strangest wedding known to man because I felt so uncomfortable and weird to be there. And it just felt like, to be honest, it was probably the worst thing to do coming out of rehab and 2 days later getting married.
Sure.
But it was, you know, I did it and I did that. And then I relapsed again about six months later and that carried on for a little while, you know, and I kind of kept on this spiral of relapse and getting back into recovery and relapse and getting back into recovery. And every time I went back in, they opened their arms and took me back in. There was no shame. There was no disappointment. It was just part of life, you know, part of being in recovery, you know, and especially in the early days, that was my story. I know lots of people's stories aren't like that. They go in and they're clean and it's fine. But for me, that definitely wasn't the case. And since then, I had 8 years and then I relapsed again after 8 years, and it was then that was another 4 months, and it was so it's been an ongoing thing in my life. And I think I found lots of ways to kind of to deal with that, and lots of things that have helped me along the way, and some things help for a while and then they don't, and I try new things, you know. And and I think that's what intrigues me so much about it, is that there are different ways, there are different things, there are things that can help you which you'd be surprised by, you know, like mindfulness is really helping me, you know, kind of silencing those demons a little bit, you know. And and a lot of different things help me, like planning my day out really helps me, you know, like if I don't have a plan or I don't have a schedule, I can go, my mind can go all over the place, and I don't want to drink or use today, but before I know it, that might happen.
Yeah.
So I put in action pretty much every day to make sure that that doesn't creep back in.
And I know you've spoken about mindfulness. So you say you put in action every day. What? How do you describe the most powerful things for you?
First of all, like the thing is, I think addiction is something which I think we have in this country. We're getting a bit better at it, but I think it's been so. We demonize addiction. Yeah. We think of it as a real kind of less than thing. It's like it's what drug addicts do, and those scumbags who rob purses and things, you know, which is true. But those people are in pain. They're not choosing that life. That life has chosen them. You know, like it hasn't chosen them. That is, you know, in some ways, I think that addiction is a way for someone to deal with trauma.
Yeah.
You know, it's a way for someone to kind of deal with trauma on a day-to-day basis. And for me, it was a solution to my to my trauma, and it kind of helped me for a while. And then they say, first it giveth, then it taketh away, you know, like, and for me, that was my experience. But then I think we've kind of got into a real cycle that we just punish people with addiction, and we kind of like, you know, you're an addict, so you're going to go to jail, or you're going to be fired, or you're going to be this, and you're going to be, you know, taking away your home, your livelihood, everything like that, because you do something which is out of your control. And it really is out of your control. I tried to control myself so many times on my own. I couldn't, you know. But I think if we look at it much more through a compassionate eye, you know, and say, look, this is actually something that's happened to you rather than you're doing, you know, we can really kind of like learn to help people, and that's only going to benefit society and benefit everybody by doing that, you know. So I think we're starting to look at that differently. I think people are starting to change their thought patterns on that, but I think it's still, you know, I mean, like if I say I'm an addict to someone, they go, no, you're not, but like, I am. I say that to remind myself in some way what I have been through to become the man I am today, you know. And so I do say that I'm an addict, but I am so much more than that as well.
Yeah, of course.
Addiction happens to anybody. You know, it doesn't pick, you know, it's not like, well, you're this guy, so you're going to get it. You know, I know people that you would not believe, you know, they've got everything and they've had the perfect life and all this kind of stuff. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to come from the obvious side of trauma, you know, like that trauma can come up in different, without saying too much, I think that trauma is the missing piece. I think that we don't necessarily talk too much about pain and where that comes from and how to heal that. To be able to get to the recovery stage, yeah. You know, and I think, you know, in a 12-step addiction, there are times when you look at these things, but it's not really mentioned that much. And I think that's something which we're overlooking. And I think anything we can do to kind of resolve that, I think, is for the better.
And like you say, like approach with an open mind, an open heart, and like compassion. You know, anything short of that is not the right approach. You know,
yeah,
any judgment. Any stigma is just reinforcing the underlying emotions and feelings anyway, which is not great.
Yeah.
And I think, however it's approached, I think it's helping someone to love themselves again.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. You know, I think, and how can we love before we love ourselves? You know, which is such a big thing, which took me a long time to kind of get used to, because I was like, love yourself, that's against what I'm... think I should do, you know, like that's kind of like, you don't love yourself, don't you? He loves himself, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, oh, you know, but like, but really that's true. Until you know, until you learn to love who you are, how can you possibly help anybody or truly love anybody else? You know, so it's I think that's a big thing. And I think community is so underrated when it comes to these things. I think having, you know, a sense of belonging, having a sense of purpose, having something to get out of bed for every day, you know, because why else would you? Why not just use? You know, because that's easy. You know, life is difficult, especially when you've got no purpose or no reason to live.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, and I think building community and building connection with other humans is so integral and so massive.
Definitely.
And I think that that's something which I think, you know, and that back to 12 steps, that's what that is. It's a fellowhood of men and women who come together for something. There's something really magical in that, which I think is, I think in today's society, which is kind of set up for addiction in a lot of ways, you look at everything we're fed and look at, it's all to stimulate you, to stimulate dopamine, to kind of like get you on that train, to kind of want more. You know, and it's losing that human connection. It's losing that kind of like this interaction, you know, which I think is so important. I think we're really kind of missing.
Yeah.
You know, and I can find that when I'm away. Like when I'm away, if I finish a show, I go to my hotel room on my own. Before I know it, I can start to feel a little bit, you know, because you know, I miss that. You know, I miss the human interaction. I miss that community. I miss that connection.
For sure. Yeah, I think that connection piece is so important, isn't it? Like, it's connection with self, connection with others, connection with life. When we don't feel those things, we try and sometimes fill those voids, as it were. And,
exactly. I always used to say it's like I had a huge hole that I tried to shove things in. Like, maybe this will work.
Yeah.
Maybe this will work. Maybe I'll take this and that will fill that hole for a little while. Sometimes maybe it would, but then it would just open bigger, you know? And I think that missing piece is connection, you know, in some way or form, you know? And I think that's what I find, that when I'm missing that, my head can go a little bit, you know. It's something which follows me, and I have to work on it, you know. But I'm okay with that because I like working on it.
Yeah.
I really do. I really enjoy working on myself. You know, I really enjoy doing things that are... And for a while, I was like, oh, it's quite selfish, you know. So we've got that in our head as well, I think, sometimes. But actually... without doing these things, if I work on my mental health through meditation or through exercise or through eating better or all these kind of things, I'm a better husband, I'm a better father, I'm a better performer, I'm a better actor, I'm a better you know, human in whole, you know. So it's these things benefit so many parts of your life and other people's lives.
Definitely. Yeah, it's resourcing yourself to be able to then give to others, and there's many metaphors and analogies as the overflowing cup, the oxygen mask analogy, but
yeah, exactly. They're all spot on.
It's really important.
They're so spot on. You know, I think it's really important. I think and sorry, just to go back to connection really quickly. I was kind of I was thinking recently, like I was very good friends with Amy Winehouse, and when she died, I realized I kind of went through a really hard patch, kind of coming to terms with that, because I wasn't very close to her at the end, and I kind of had a lot of guilt and shame around that, and kind of and I was thinking, you know, about me when I was at my worst, when I was in the band, and I was like, man, I was surrounded by people all the time. Mm. I was surrounded by, I was playing shows to tens of thousands of people. I was like, I shouldn't have been so lonely, you know, but I was, you know, and it was, and I think, you know, you look at certain people and you're like, they have everything. Why is that happening to them? You know, and I think it's, you know, when it comes to connection, I think sometimes a change in your life that is unrelatable to the people that you love and that love you can be really hard to connect with them on. You know, because I didn't want to bring anything that I was going through to people that I grew up with.
Yeah.
Like, my friends became very distant to me because I didn't live the same life to them and I couldn't really relate to them. You know, so I had a real issue kind of like talking about anything I was going through, you know, because like poor pop star, whatever, you know, like, so I kind of had this, I didn't want to burden anybody, especially people that I knew were going through real stuff, you know, like I was like, you know, I should be cool to you, you know, but like, you know, it was, it's a really weird kind of, it's such a strange thing that happens when you're young and that kind of thing happens to you. Like, it's kind of undescribable what that life becomes. And until you, till it happens, you don't really understand what that's going to be. And sometimes it's not what you think it is, you know.
For sure.
And it's taken me a long time to kind of go, actually, it wasn't necessarily the environment or what was happening to me. It was my uncomfortableness in my own skin and me being uncomfortable being me that was just amplified by the surrounding and the career that I'd chosen, the life that I was then living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. It comes back to that self-acceptance, that self-love, that self-knowing. So I think getting to know oneself is just is really important.
Yeah.
And do you have, as you've mentioned, you know, your old mates and them, your perception being that they wouldn't really understand your life and the things that you were going through. Mm. Did you have close friends within the industry?
Not really.
Yeah.
No. When I think about it, not really. I had people I worked with, but I had people that cared about me.
Yeah.
And I know that now, you know, but I didn't know that then, you know, like I thought, you know, and also there's something within me that didn't want to rock the boat.
Sure.
You know, that like the train is moving, the train's earning money. Don't step off. Don't mess it up. You know, like don't let them in because they'll find out and you might lose it, or you might lose it for all of these people that are earning from it, and all this kind of comes into play, and you don't want to let them down, you know. And you know that everyone around you is relying on you being on stage at 9 p.m you know, or you turning up to the TV, or you doing the radio, or you doing it, whatever you're going to be doing, you have to do that. And if you don't, then I was always worried that I was going to be the reason it ended, or the reason, you know. So I kept everything in.
So it takes a lot of courage to go against that, and actually then, like you say, and I think you use the word give up, and you use the word surrender and ask for help, but it takes a lot of courage to eventually do that. Would you describe it as courageous?
I think it's really courageous, and I think it's the in my head I build it up to such a disaster to have to ask for help and to have to own up to what I was doing and where I was, and I thought people are going to judge me and people are going to think so lowly of me, and you know, that I can't stop taking this drug, and I can't, you know, I should be able to do this, and I can't, you know, something wrong with me, I've got no willpower, all these kind of things, when, you know, it's not that, it's something completely different. And it took me a long time to learn what that was, but I was so scared to own up to this because of shame.
Yeah.
And actually, when I did, I was met with nothing but love and kindness. And it was, and in fact, lots of people were like, thank God you've you finally, you know, we've been waiting for, you know, like, so, and it was a beautiful experience, you know, and it's, don't get me wrong, it's hard, you know, that the next, the stage after that is difficult too, but it's much, easier than drinking and using, because that was, a daily struggle to kind of do that and to hide that, and the lying and the manipulation, all that kind of stuff that goes with that is exhausting, you know, but then once you kind of go, oh, okay, great. Now what? You know, like, I can kind of face that. And plus facing it sober is the only way to do it. Otherwise, you're never going to be able to really truly face it, you know.
And would you say that you are grateful for your darkest, most difficult moments and periods in your life? Would you say you're grateful for them?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny you say that. Yeah, I am very grateful for them. I don't regret anything, you know, which is really took me a long time to understand, because I regretted everything. I was so ashamed, and I thought I'd messed so many things up and ruined so many people's lives, and was when actually I hadn't really, and even if I had, I was able to make amends with them and truly say sorry, and then to understand me saying sorry. And to take it, and sometimes they took it, sometimes they didn't, you know, but it was, but that's them. And I was able to keep my side of the street clean and do me. And then I'm able to live with that, you know? And so, I'm not ashamed of that life. I am grateful, because now I know, I'm not sure who I would have been without it, because I'm just me. But then, I do believe that that is all making me the person I am now, and I'm quite happy with that guy. So it's kind of like, I am grateful for those things.
It's that beautiful lotus in the mud metaphor. I love that. You know, lotus, it grows in the mud,
right?
And it stays there for a long time in the mud, like that's where it gets its source from, its nutrients, etc. And then eventually it breaks through above the water into this beautiful, like, lotus. But it can only do that through living in the mud for a while.
That's beautiful. That's
a lovely metaphor.
That's fantastic. Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Yeah. You know, I feel like I'm still kind of poking my head out of the water right now. You know, it's kind of, well, that's great, isn't it? To kind of feel like you've kind of got, like, places to go, you know, kind of like it feels really kind of, and if those things didn't happen, I'd still be happy.
Definitely.
You know, which is kind of good, you know. But, and don't get me wrong, that's not all the time. Sometimes I have days where I feel like crap.
Exactly.
You know, like, some days things are rubbish, you know, like, kind of like, I can have rubbish days too, and bad things happen, you know, like, but I'm able to face them now rather than run away from them.
Exactly.
You know, and run away and kind of push them under the carpet and never deal with them. Yeah. I'm able to go, okay, what's this? Okay, that's terrible. Let's deal with that.
Yeah,
you know, and kind of like, and that's only gonna make it better.
Definitely. I mean, not to overdo this metaphor here, but like that lotus doesn't come up to the sun and stay there. It comes back down into the mud again, and then it goes back up.
Oh, you know what
I mean?
Really? That kind of over time. Amazing. So, like,
and I think we can think of our lives in that way. But if we approach our difficulties and our challenges in a way, we have like just maybe a surrender sometimes, an open heart, a willingness to. And this is difficult to do in the moment sometimes, but a willingness to learn from the difficulties we face. That's all the food for flourishing in our lives. And it's not some like state you reach and that's a ta-da, but it's more like a spirit, an impulse, a way of living your life that I think you can learn through something like addiction and dark times and difficulty.
You know, like I think this comes back exactly like you said, it comes back to this too shall pass, you know, like it's whatever you're going through, it will end.
Definitely.
You know, like I remember when I first had my first child, like I was given this advice by somebody, and like I was given lots of advice about don't let them sleep in your bed, don't do this, don't do that, all that kind of advice. And the one piece of advice, which was the one piece that really stuck with me and was brilliant, was whatever's happening, it won't last. So if it's bad, it won't last. But if it's good, unfortunately, it won't last.
Exactly.
But it will move and it will change. And that's just life, right? Yeah. Kind of like just all, you know, like, I mean, even in the last 3 years, what's happened has just been like, what?
Yeah.
You know, like, but, you know, and even at the worst times, you know, like, there's still kind of like an element of like, okay, this will pass. Yeah. We will get somewhere, you know?
Yeah. Mm. For me, that makes me think of, you know, like a lens through which we look at our life, or just how we encounter life, the good and the bad. But for me, that I've been thinking about this, the thing that gets like the heart of it is appreciation. Like, it's just appreciation of life, which includes everything.
Yeah.
You know, an appreciation of self, which includes everything, of others, which includes everything. It's to come back to that self-love thing. You can't, if you're trying to seek self-love, let's say, and that's the solution to moving past something like addiction, that can't exclude the ugly stuff, the bad stuff, the difficult stuff. No. Like, self-love is all, is everything.
It's completely,
and you can bring that kind of spirit to the whole of life. I think there's something in that.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I think we're all kind of we're all learning that. I think we're all guilty of kind of like when, like, I don't get too much into COVID stuff, but like when lockdowns were happening, like, we were very quickly, I can't wait for things to be back to normal. Like, after a while, I was like, actually, I don't want to be back to what normal was. I want something different from this. You know, that really gave me an element of kind of like sitting down and assessing, going, right, what was so great about that? You know, actually, was that great? Right, what do I really want?
Yeah.
You know, and it really focused me, really kind of made me go, okay, great. What actually brings me happiness? And what was I doing because I thought other people think it was cool? You know, and I've tried to stop doing those things.
Yeah.
You know, which has been something which has been great, which has been turning down certain things and kind of not doing other aspects of my life, which I enjoyed, but only because I was doing them because I just wanted someone to go, hey, well done. You know, like, that's what I wanted. I wanted someone to appreciate me, when really, I didn't really love what I was doing, but I wanted people to think it was great. You know, so it's that was something which came out of that for me, and it's kind of been, and so far it's been great.
Yeah.
You know.
That's just being honest with yourself, I think, is so important.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes we live out lives that aren't really our own, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and I think it's really hard to find out the kind of, like, you know, your authentic self.
Yeah.
You know. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, sure.
I have no idea what that means. So when I think about that, I'm like, what's my authentic self?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to do stuff I love. And and sometimes they work, sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
You know, but when I'm I read Matthew McConaughey's book, which I loved, like Greenlight. I thought it was such an incredible book. And he talks a lot about this kind of stuff, you know, like when you do stuff, you know, like, he said, look, I've got nothing against money. You know, and I was like, I have nothing against money. I like money. I like buying things. I like nice stuff, you know. But whenever I do something for that, which whenever I do something which goes against my soul, the money's never worth it.
Yeah.
The what I get is not worth the thing, you know. Like, it's not, jeopardizing your soul for something is not what life is about for me.
Right.
You know, I always regret those decisions, and I kind of try to really think about them now before I make them.
Yeah.
You know,
we sometimes get stuck in just habitual ways of doing things and thinking about things. But if you just, and we all have this opportunity, just connect to ourselves.
Yeah.
We inevitably know what's right for us in that moment. Like, we can guide ourselves, as it were, or be guided by our soul, like you say.
Yeah, yeah. But sometimes we can be, we can make those decisions wrongly because we're scared.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm guilty of going, no, I don't think that's right for me, when actually I'm terrified of it. And I don't want to do it because I don't want to be seen as being rubbish or being out of my depth or not good enough, you know, like, and I can make the decisions based on fear.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, when I run towards the things that scare me, when I actually physically go, yep, that boom, you know.
Definitely.
Sometimes it's a messy path getting there, but I'm always pleased I did.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always pleased I did it, you know, and it's, I've got a few of them going on right now, and I'm terrified of them, you know, but I'm like, right, let's do it, you know, because it's so scary.
Life happens. That's where
exactly. That's where the, you know, the beauty happens in the mess, you know, like, and it's, and that's what's kind of driving me at the moment. I'm trying to run towards more things that scare me. I've got one coming out, which is terrifying, you know. It's just like, okay, let's do it, you know.
It's brilliant. Yeah. And often what scares you is it's the unknown. It's moving towards the unknown, like stepping towards that frontier between what you do know and what you don't know.
Yeah.
Because we tend to stay stuck in, well, not stuck, it's easier to stay stuck in your familiar zone, think sometimes called your comfort zone, but I think familiar zone might be a better way to
That's a much better way. Yeah, completely. Because sometimes being in your comfort zone ain't very comfortable. So
exactly.
It's just what you do.
Familiar zone. It's
you
easy.
Know, familiar. Yeah, yeah.
So what is this scary thing that you're moving towards?
Well, I'm kind of moving into a bit more kind of like looking into addiction and kind of like really kind of going into that kind of world. And it feeds into this thing like, who are you to talk about this? Yeah. You're not a doctor. You don't know anything, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, but I've been through a lot of it, you know. And actually what's driving me is just the thirst for knowledge. Mm. Like I really love it and I really want to know more about it. And the more I see, the more I read, the more I hear, there's so much out there from so many different people now that I think, and unless you're in a certain place, you don't get to see those things.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, unless you're in a certain place in your life when, but I'm like, if I could have told myself this 8 years ago, which I've just read, that would have made such a difference to me then.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't hear it till now when necessarily I'm in a much better place. But if I told myself then, that could have made a real difference.
Yeah.
I'm like, why, where's the middleman here between these experts and the person on the street? You know, where's the middleman? Like, we need to kind of get this information out there.
And that's the important thing. I mean, experts, obviously, I mean, experts know a lot about subject matter, certain subject matter. And but what will truly connect with people are the human stories.
Yeah.
And if you can bridge that gap between reductionist expert theories and so on, which I'm not going to connect, but be that middle man that tells the human story and brings it to people, like that, there's some power in that.
Yeah, I think there's power in that. And I think, I'm really excited about it. Like, I really love that kind of world. And I kind of love, and also I don't really understand everything I'm hearing.
Sure.
You know, so I'm like, right, how do I, you know, so I need to learn more. I need to get more knowledge. I need to get this. I need to talk to that person. I need to go, you know, which is all exciting and fun.
Yeah. So you're talking about learning more, and clearly you are someone that loves to learn. You mentioned Matthew McConaughey's book. Are there any other books or teachings or people that have been quite inspirational for you or that you've learned a lot from?
At the moment, Dr. Gabor Mate has been huge. Yeah. Like I read a couple of his books now, and he's been, if you don't know who he is, just search his name on YouTube. There's videos, and like the stuff he will tell you will blow your mind. You know, like, I mean, you obviously know who he is, but then there's people out there who don't. And I think, and he's one of those people that is kind of like Voldemort in certain rooms you can't talk about, you know, because he's got different ideas to everyone else. But what he speaks about speaks to me, you know, and what he says is so powerful to me, you know. I'm like, it makes sense to me, and I'm one of these people, you know. So I'm like, he's truly a really powerful force in these worlds, you know, in a lot of different places right now. His head's in a lot of different games, you know. But he's incredible. I think do you know how else I really love Hugh Jackman. Like, I find him like very different scale, very different sideways step. But he's someone I could listen to for days. You know, like, I search everything he does. I've searched every interview he's done. You know, like, I find his mindset and the way he approaches things and the way he talks about life so interesting and kind of and powerful and he's just got something about him which I really admire.
He's a, I mean, and I use this word in the best sense, he seems to be a very positive
man. Definitely. And he, you know, and he's been through some stuff, you know, like you know, and he's and whenever he talks about, he also gives me hope. Like, he really gives me hope.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, when you think about what sometimes this ideas above your station thing can really eat away at me. You know, I'm like, what are you doing? Don't think that. You can't go there. You can't do that. You can't go to this audition. You can't do that. Then I hear Hugh Jackman talk and I'm like, yeah, I can. Yeah, I can. You know, like, why not? You know, like, I'm going to, you know, like, he's just really, he really inspires me in so many ways.
Brilliant. So, I mean, you've clearly been through a journey, and it's that journey that's given you everything that you're now bringing forth into the world. and you may already have mentioned it with your interest in addiction and being a voice within that space. But if you were to project forward 10 years, let's say, and you're continuing to be led by your soul and moving towards the unknown and challenging yourself, like, do you have any sense of what that next 10 years could look like, or what your life would look like in 10 years, what you might be doing in the world? Or is that
too blurry
a question? You do have an idea. Okay.
I have an idea, which is a pretty hefty goal.
Yeah. I'd love to hear
it. And it's something about, I read a book by a guy called Yohimi Harry, who's talks about addiction and kind of where, like, pretty much just about the drug war and kind of what that did for the state of addiction and drug abuse in the world, you know, kind of what that actually was about. And it kind of really opened my eyes to it. And he talked about something called Rat Park, which was an experiment that some scientists did. In the 60s, they put a rat in a cage and they gave them two water bottles. Oh, yeah. Did you hear about this study? Yeah. And basically they gave them two water bottles, and one of them had heroin in them, one of them had water, and then they did the same study with cocaine. And they put the rat in the cage, and every time the rat went to the heroin, went to the cocaine, overdosed and died every single time. So they were like, heroin and cocaine are the most addictive substances on earth. Everyone will become addicted to this. If you try it, you will become addicted and die. And then another guy went, wait a sec, you took a rat away from its life and its family. You put it in sole confinement on its own in just a little cage, and you gave it a way out. You know, like, who wouldn't take that way out? You know, like, if your life is completely and utterly miserable and you've got something which takes the pain away, why wouldn't you do that? So they did the same experiment where they put the same water bottles up in each station, but they built something called Rat Park, which is a room, huge room. They put loads of rats in, so the rats had rats to have sex with, to be friends with. They put little balls so they could play games. They had great food. They had enough food for them to live. You know, they had everything set out for them, and the same water bottles were at every water station. No rat died. No rat overdosed. No rat. Occasionally, rats would go to that thing. Occasionally, like, and they'd do it, and they might not go back for months, or they might never go back. But it was always there, and no rat died. No rat. So they were like, and that's what I'm getting back to about connection. I'm like, they gave these rats a life which was meant for them.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, there's something really magical in that. And I'm like, what if we could, you know, build, say, a farm? Right, and we could build a farm that produces food, right? But it's also a rehab center. So we bring people in off the streets. We bring people in with serious drug issues. We give them a sense of community. We give them rehabilitation. We give them group therapy. We give them a place to live. We give them money for working at the farm. When they're ready, they can step up and they can work at the farm. They can leave whenever they want, or they can stay there as long as they want, and they can earn enough money to then go and start their own thing, or they can. But we give them a purpose, we give them a direction, we give them connection, we give them community.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe the food that we make goes to feeding homeless peoples or shelters or something like that. So we're kind of we're building something which is for a bigger purpose and a community. So they're part of something bigger than themselves. You know, I think there's something in that. And I think if I could, I'd like to build that.
I think it's a beautiful vision. I love it. Great. I really love it.
That's what I'd love to do. That's what hopefully I'll be doing in 10 years.
And I love that. I mean, I didn't actually know about the Rat Park. I just knew about the
first experiment. Initial experience. That's all we hear.
Amazing. I mean, that just, it just speaks to this idea of flourishing.
Yeah.
And what human beings need to flourish. And, you know, flourishing is a twofold thing. There's one aspect where it depends on the agency of the individual. But also the environment that person exists within. And so, the question is, how can we co-create environments that support the needs and the well-being of each other?
Yeah.
And you've spoken to the key things that need to be addressed or provided for people. But, I mean, do you have hope for the world that we can co-create those kinds of societies that foster flourishing
people? I think
we
definitely can. I mean, I think the more... Like, when I first got into recovery, there was limited options and limited knowledge, and everything was, you know, like, I didn't tell anybody I was in recovery. You know, I didn't mention it, not yeah. because I was ashamed, but because it just, well, I kind of was ashamed. But also, I think maybe it was just something that wasn't talked about. It was a secret thing, you know, and like, and you know, it's anonymous for a reason, you know, and it's kind of like, the longer I've gone on, the more I think the world is opening up to this fact that there's something in this that yeah. is out of our control, and it's getting worse. You know, it's not getting better. Death rates aren't going down from mm-hmm. drug abuse. Like, less lives are not being destroyed. You know, like, it's only getting worse. You know, yeah. like, and now we're finding addictions prop up in the most peculiar places for peculiar things. You know, and I think it's I think that gives me real hope that we are coming to a world where actually sure. we're going to be able to address this. Like, I remember when Russell Brown went to Parliament and talked about mm-hmm. it. There were so many smarmy remarks about it. And I was like, this guy is doing something absolutely mm-hmm. incredible for society right now. Like, he's standing up in front of these people, you know, and delivering something so eloquently and beautifully, yeah. like, and in such a perfect way. And it was given respect, but it wasn't given the acknowledgement yeah. I think it would have been given right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think, but because of that, I really do believe that this country has started to spiral into a place where we're going to have to look at this, whether necessarily people want to or not.
Yeah.
And I think there are solutions and there are ways to deal with it. And I think I have real hope for the future.
Amazing. Amazing. When you mentioned Russell Brand there, which sort of reinforces this idea, but I believe that there's like a healthy rebellion that is required. And that's why, you know, the likes of someone like yourself who, let's say, I'm guessing you have a rebellious spirit, and that may have manifested in destructive ways, but that same rebellious spirit can be used in constructive ways, like, you know, positive rebellion against the existing, you know, structures and conditions in our society that are not providing the, you know, soul food and the nourishment for our spirits as human beings, and, yeah. and a sense of belonging and connection and self-esteem and the like that helps us to flourish. Like, we almost need to rebel against those restrictive conditions that we sort of, many people find themselves in, but yeah. like, but do it with a rebellious spirit. Does that yeah, connect no, with you in any way?
Absolutely.
Do you know what
if
I mean?
You think of everything in the world, when it yeah. changes, it comes from rebellion.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like everything, there is change that happens, but it has to be done in a way that people have to stand up and listen.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and I'm not saying that I'm doing anything like that, but I'm willing to contribute.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's something which I feel like, if you have something that is in you that you want to change, you know, like, if not you, then who? If not yeah. now, then yeah. when? You know,
yeah,
like,
for sure.
that always comes into my head, you know, like, I always think of it from a Rage Against the Machine song, but like,
yeah.
It's so true. Like if you sit down and do nothing, nothing will happen, you know, or maybe someone else might be doing it, but you can yeah. always add to that.
Yeah.
You know, I think, there's, and I pick my battles very carefully, you know, but if there's ever a chance, I will be involved in whichever way I can.
It's that, often used be the change thing, but
yeah.
effectively that. Thank you so much. You've shared. Thanks for being so open, first of all, for
I've loved it.
Bearing your soul, as it were.
Yeah.
Are there any things you feel like you haven't said that you would be good for people to hear? Any last messages?
I don't know, man. I think I kind of mentioned it earlier on, but I always thought that I never wanted to say too much because you know, like, it's like, I think it's a very British thing. You don't air your dirty laundry.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of keep that behind closed doors, all that kind of stuff. That's not helpful.
Mm-mm.
That's the most unhelpful thing, I think, especially for me. You know, as soon as I was open and
yeah.
I talked about things and I asked for help, and if someone can't help you, there, you know, like, there will be someone who can, you know, and I think, but unless you put yourself out there, you know, it's very hard for them to reach you. I think, you know, and sometimes I've had interesting situations where I've said, are you okay? you know, and I've had an answer which I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
And that's okay too. Sometimes people are waiting for someone to ask, you know, so if you're seeing someone struggling or you see someone or you see something you're worried about, don't think it's going to go away because it probably won't. You know, like reaching out to somebody who's in trouble is a big thing, and them reaching out to you is a big thing. So I think sometimes it can go two ways.
Yeah, that's really important. Again, it speaks to courage, I think.
Yeah.
And also that we connect through our vulnerability.
Yeah.
So we should be courageous and embrace our vulnerability and
absolutely connect through that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I've really,
thank you, man.
Really
thank you very much.
What you had to say.
I've had a great chat. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, Matt.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode and another brilliant guest. Flourish is a podcast from Unmind, the mental health platform transforming the world of workplace well-being. To find out more, visit unmind.com or follow us on socials at UnmindHQ. You can also find me, your host, on Instagram at Steve@Unmind. See you next time.